You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
He's recently just put out a new experimental noise project called The King in Yellow, which takes inspiration from a 1895 book by the same name by the American writer Robert W. Chambers. We'll be talking all about that in just a moment. We have Ben Andrews, a.k.a. Black Bayer, here on the line from Australia. Good morning to you, Ben. How are we doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm very glad to hear, man. I'm super glad to hear that. Whereabouts in Australia do you reside? Are you one of those Nam folks?
Yep, I am.
Nice. What's the vibe over there at the moment? Is it pretty swag?
Yeah, it's good. It's everything sort of comes to a close at this end of the year. So it gets pretty quiet around here, which I like.
True. Do you have any holiday plans yourself?
I want to stay home with my wife this year and just relax.
Nice. I wouldn't guess that from the album. Oh, man. It has been a pretty big year for you and your wife. You got married in April, is that correct?
It is, yeah, we did.
That's beautiful. And I saw a video where y'all cut the cake, which was huge. It was topped to the brim with strawberries. How many strawberries were on top of that thing?
That cake was pretty epic. I don't really eat sweet food, so it was more of a, like, we need a cake because it's a wedding type thing.
Yeah, because it's just tradition.
I don't know. There might have been hundreds. I don't know.
It was huge, man. And it was Italian-themed, right?
Yes, sort of, yeah.
Do you have Italian heritage?
No, I think maybe just from the cake. I mean, we got married in Indonesia.
Mm.
My wife's Indonesian.
That would have been fun. That would have been a lot of fun.
It was a great experience.
Yeah, hell yeah. The new album, The King in Yellow, as I mentioned just before when I introduced you, it's inspired by a book of the same name by the American writer Robert W. Chambers, who is sort of a proto-horror writer, very, very influential on H.P. Lovecraft. The book itself is a collection of short stories with some supernatural, some horror-y, and some quite lovely and bright. When did you stumble upon this book?
I think it came about after I watched one of the True Detective series.
Oh, right.
If you're familiar with that series, and it was sort of loosely, you know, the sort of the supernatural element and the villain part of it was kind of loosely based on that. But really, my family reside in England. I'm from London originally, and me and my mum, for a few years, when we would go for walks, they live out in the countryside, like an hour from London, south of London, uh-huh. And we discovered these kind of like witchcraft-esque structures that were built in the forest, and that kind of led me down a bit of a rabbit hole of that sort of that kind of literature,
mm.
And it sort of just shaped the. It didn't really have any influence on the music. It kind of just shaped the artwork and the song names and the sort of emphasis behind it. Leaving the music separate
I was going to say, was your time in England? Was that I saw an Instagram post that about something about Kentish witches? Is that
yeah? Apparently, that's where my parents live in Kent, and apparently these structures were put in place by Kentish witches, or children having fun. I mean, you know, depends how far you want to go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, they were kind of amazing. Like you actually feel like they were quite intricate, and yeah, I took loads of photos over the years, and it kind of just shaped how. I mean, that album, the King in Yellow, we recorded it, you know, four and a half years ago, and kind of over COVID and some other issues. Obviously, there was a bit of setbacks with releasing it and such.
Yeah.
But yeah, it all sort of came about because Alex, the label boss here in Australia at Endless, he kind of is an old friend of mine, and he sort of not pushed, but, you know, coerced me into, like, oh, you really need to do this solo album. You know, we should do it up in my town in Bendigo, which is in, like...
That's, like, just north of Melbourne, right? It's not too far away.
Yeah, a couple of hours. So
quite a lot of bogans from what I hear.
Yeah, I mean, there is, but there's also... there's an art scene, there's an art gallery, and there's some old churches, and this particular...
Oh, I don't mean to insult bogans or say that the town is lesser for it. I'm just saying, I've heard there's lots of bogans.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The further north you go, the more you get, I guess. But, we happened upon this dilapidated church that Alex happened to get keys for. We were able to record in there over this weekend, sort of just after COVID period. But it was in quite a state of disrepair. It was really dirty, and everything, you know, everything was broken. I don't think it had been used as a church for many years, and there'd been some vandalism and we took a while to kind of clean it up, took some photos. It's kind of scary because there's all these downstairs rooms and a lot of graffiti that sort of didn't make it feel like a church anymore. But
deconsecrated.
Yeah, I guess that's the word. But I mean, the crazy thing was, as soon as we started making music, and it was a really hot weekend here, as soon as we started making music, local people would come in, like, over the weekend and be like, oh, we live across the road. What is this? Are you opening up as a gig space? This is amazing. And they were all, like, really, really appreciative. We thought they were coming to say, shut up. But, they were really appreciative of something happened, and I feel like it was a real sad thing that
kind of condemned, yeah. Well, it's the All Saints Church in Bendigo, a church that's been around since 1856, one of the oldest churches in Australia. Did you see the news in August that it had actually almost caught fire?
Yeah.
It's pretty spooky, man.
It didn't surprise me at all, because when we got in there, there was so much rubbish and refuse that it would take. And I think there were some rough sleepers, you know, using it as accommodation, so it wouldn't take much to set it ablaze, for sure. That didn't surprise me. But the building itself is like an old stone building which is not going anywhere, even if it does catch a light.
In The King in Yellow, the book by Robert Chambers, there's a play that causes madness to anyone who reads it. And from what I read in the press release, it said that's sort of what the album is almost based on. It's taking influence from. It's a noise version of the play that causes madness. Is that correct, or is that sort of just a flourishment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was perhaps...
an influence?
Yeah, it was definitely an influence. That's probably a flourishment from the press release writer as well, to kind of tie the sounds and the sort of, you know, the project together. But yeah, for sure. I mean, I liked that line when I read it back from the press release clippings. I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty good, because I mean we set about to make a you know, kind of ambient dungeon synth, whatever you want to call it, record. And then as it came to be, we realized that it was sort of two particular sides of music. Side A being guitar focused, and side B being synth
heavy. Yeah, totally.
And it felt like it we didn't need to. It felt like those were two separate entities, two separate sides to the project. So I feel like it worked quite well when we were laying it all out and mastering it, to keep them sound separate.
It's funny about sounding separate, because producer and engineer Alex Cameron, who you mentioned before, he recorded the album in that church with you, and he said that your rig really pushed his engineering skills and his minimal recording setup to the test. So I want to know, what kind of recording setup was he running, and just how beastly is your noisy rig?
Yeah, it was... I mean, I particularly wanted to do it really, really raw, a couple of mics in the room and let the room and the sounds do its talking. And Alex's rig was rudimentary. It was like a Pro Tools setup from a desktop, so we had to card all that in. But then it was maybe, I think we maybe used four microphones one of which we broke accidentally in that glass shattering scene.
The track behind the lake where it's just people just like walking through trash.
Yeah, well, it's just me and Alex because we were hanging a microphone over what might have been an old confession box or something.
Whoa.
And all this glass was breaking and the microphone ended up swinging through the glass, and then we just sort of went with it and trod on it all. Mm. And I think we broke one of the capsules in that. But then we ended up using three microphones. You can hear on headphones, you can hear a lot of parts of the room, which I really liked. And I think Alex had never recorded something music like that before. He's more done, rock and punk bands. And so he was really excited for the challenge and wanted to step outside his comfort zone. Whereas Xavier Irvine, who mixed the record, is well abreast of that sort of music. And so he sort of heard it was like, well, okay, this is also a tough mix because there's not much to go with. There's barely any overdubs, a couple of microphones, and let's let the room do the talking, which we did, and I was happy about.
Well, it was recorded with many fast takes. As you mentioned before, you weren't fussy about the arrangements. You're more about letting the environment do its thing. Do you normally embrace that sort of fast, let's get it done approach when recording noise stuff? Capture lightning in a bottle, or was that something you just wanted to do for this record?
No, these days with every project I do, I want it done quickly because over the years I've felt that when I've been fastidious or meticulous about doing lots of takes especially with other projects, it never the take 40 or the take 50 or whatever is never better than an early take. So, like, for example, if you take a photo of your cat on your iPhone and you take five of them, invariably the first one's probably the one that you're going to use, and I feel like that's the approach we took with this. And I also feel like that keeps the energy levels high and motivation levels high, because I would get, if I had to do those takes three or four or five or six or seven or whatever times, I would become frustrated and want to move on. And with my projects now, like with my black metal band Kalat, we wouldn't do more than two or three takes of a song, and that seems to work fine for us. Feel like that's how I like to work in my old age.
I feel like it's a strategy that works well for a very loud band, because you're not super subjected to, I mean, I don't know if there's some kind of a misstep in the recording process, it's probably going to be pretty hard to identify.
Agreed.
Yeah, which is awesome. It's great. I want to touch on the fifth track on here, Repairer of Reputation, where we get the first words of spoken by anyone on the record. And I assume that they're in Japanese. I'm not entirely sure. They play off against this massive buzzing bass synth beautifully, which is like the first kind of moment I think that we get a lot of synthy heavy activity. Where did the impetus to have those words come from, and what is the person saying on the song?
It's a really old friend of mine who resides in Japan. I think I met him on the he was our tour promoter with my disco for many years. We've done a bunch of tours over there. And I think I wrote him like some words in English, and he reiterated them in Japanese. But being Japanese, he was very, very particular about it. He wanted it to be whispery.
Mm.
And he teaches at a school, so he had access to some audio stuff. But I was like, no, don't do any of that. Just send me a voice note on Messenger or whatever way we did it at the time.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember what he's saying, because I wrote it so long ago, probably 5 years ago. But it kind of mirrors the concept of it is it kind of mirrors the only other vocal sample, which is at the end of side B.
Mm.
And so I feel like it was quite fitting to sort of code those two pieces of music out with some words. Side B ones I didn't write, they came from a film. But yeah, we've been friends with Tomoaki, the Japanese guy who did that. He's a very good acoustic minimal musician in his own right as well.
Mm. Oh, dope. It reminds me, just hearing it and the context of the album, which is quite scary at points. It reminded me of a film I'm yet to see called Onibaba, which is like a classic sort of Japanese horror film from the 60s, which apparently is very, very good. Cool. If you look up Onibaba, you see this big, scary, old traditional face mask, and definitely gives off some vibes that relate to the song quite strongly. One real pertinent question I had is that while you know the recording process was fast, was it did it take quite a while for the mixes and the masters to make this thing sound as it does? Because it's full of texture in the sonics on The King in Yellow.
Yeah, you're right. So as quick as I wrote it, which would have been a matter of weeks, and then the recording was only a Saturday Sunday. The mixing took a while. There were a lot of particular time code fades that I wanted, and parts where the vocals come in or where the drones do or whatever, and we had to sort of get rid of some of the sounds had too much room in it, you could hear people's feet and whatnot. I remember Xavier. It took months for him to get it how I wanted, and it was mostly because there wasn't that much to work with, and I probably in hindsight wanted more of a stereo image sound, and it came out quite mono because of the fact that we're only using three or four microphones, and so Xavier had to sort of extrapolate on that and kind of get it good. He's really good at that stuff, though. He's very, very particular. Mastering with Casey Rice was mildly tedious, just because it was again having to do time fades and stuff with that, with the vocal samples coming in and out, and some other samples like the rain and footsteps at the end of the Side B. It definitely took longer than it did to make the record. I think that another reason we didn't take so long on the recording point was we couldn't leave any of our equipment set up overnight due to the fact that the place was abandoned and not secure, and so it would have been a risk. So our original idea was to sleep there.
Whoa. Squatter's rights.
The landlord who gave us the key was like, do what you want, but just saying that, rough sleepers have been using this, so, you might not be safe. So we ended up on the Saturday night tearing everything down, putting it into the vans, taking it into Alex's house, going out for dinner, and then doing it again the next day. And both days were really, really hot here. They were like 35-degree days. Mm. So by 5 p.m. Sunday, we were both pretty, pretty spent and didn't really. It was the Easter weekend, so we did have until the Tuesday or whatever off. We had planned to, we could have run till Monday, Tuesday or whatever, but I wanted it done. I wanted to go out drinking probably or something. So that's another reason it didn't take so long.
A cracker. Well, I hope that that this comes full circle and that you can do a show at that church. That'd be dope. I want to thank you for your time and coming on the show this morning, Ben. It's been a real privilege to talk to you. Do you have any final words, thoughts, opinions, concerns you want to leave with our lovely listeners?
I appreciate you taking the time to have me on Radio 1. Thank you very much.
No stress, man. Happy holidays. Have a dope Christmas. And hopefully all goes well over in... Thanks, man.
Thanks so much.
All right, folks. That was Ben Andrews. We're talking to Ben about his new record, The King in Yellow, which he's released under the pseudonym Black Bayer. After a little bit of this new album, The King in Yellow, we'll have Clowning Around, the last Clowning Around for the year, and then we'll probably wrap up the show pretty soon. Here is The Last King from The King in Yellow by Black Bayer. Then we'll have Zoo with Orc. You are listening to The One. Keep it locked.
Was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.